Welcome to La Liga Weekly, a podcast in which every week we talk about La Liga, where Barcelona play tiki-taka, Atletico Madrid have the best defence in the world, Real Madrid score loads of goals, Sevilla and Betis are flaky. Now, did I miss a meeting? Did we agree to change? Next, you'll be telling me that Gareth Bale played and that everyone understands what the handball law is. All right, the last one, I was just being silly. So my apologies. Yeah, what a round of games. Atleti were involved in another thriller. Barcelona delivered 398 crosses into the penalty area before Xavi realised he was sitting next to a 6'3" centre-forward. I thought De Jong was at midfielder that we got from Ajax. Anyway, Gareth Bale played for some reason. Terry Gibson will explain why he flew out to Spain. He'll be able to explain everything for us, even though he did spend all night watching the Super Bowl and then had to fly home on Ryanair. I'm not sure which was the biggest former, Terry. but it was worth the trip this weekend, wasn't it, Terry? Because it was, wow, what a collection of games. Where do we start? Should we start with Atleti? Because Atleti are the most entertaining.
You're going to start with Cadiz Celta.
I confess, I normally go back and I check out and I make sure I've caught up with everything, but I haven't done Cadiz Celta. I'll rely on your expertise, Terry. Okay. However, Atleti are the most entertaining team in world football, as we all know. Yet 3 weeks in a row, isn't it, that their games have been crazy but fun and entertaining and stuff. So they beat Itafi by 4-3. They were two up. Itafi fought back and took the lead. This is right, isn't it? And then they equalised before halftime, yeah. 3-3 at halftime. And then Felipe got sent off for trying to kick off. Who's it? Whose head did he try and kick off the shoulders? Aaron Barry.
Aaron Barry.
Yeah. And then the 10 men. Mario Hermoso, who can't defend, but he can score dramatic last-minute goals, it turns out. What a game.
It was. I mean, let's just do Getafe first, because give them credit where they are, where they've come from, under Kike Sanchez Flores. I wouldn't say it wasn't a surprise. It's still a surprise when they came back from 2-0 down, but it looked like it was going to be a comfortable evening for Atletico. For them to come back to 3-2 before half-time, the only disappointment I would imagine would be there were shades. They were looking for a draw at the end and invited Atletico onto them a little bit. And Simeone was making all the changes. I mean, it was so many changes in terms of the same again as we saw against Valencia, putting on more attacking players and just, you know, at 10 minutes to go, they kind of went for it a little bit more. So Getafe were excellent. They'd just be disappointed they didn't actually manage to hold them and get a football could be cruel sometimes, and they were unlucky not to get a point that they probably deserved. So they're going great guns at the moment. Eni Zunal's penalties were identical, weren't they? You look at them and you think, is that the second one or the first one? He picked the same spot on both of them. Mayoral took his goal well, terrible defence from Atletico. So that Getafe were fantastic and it made for a great game. But Atletico, I don't know where to start because it is so untidy. I was asked to analyse them on La Liga TV if there was anything in particular I wanted to analyse. And I gave it a good thought and I thought, you need a really long programme. I mean, two of the goals are accidental handballs, aren't they?
A two-hour special, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like you've got three goals to analyse and say, I mean, we all know where the problems are. They're obviously defensively, aren't they? They've conceded more goals already this season than any other season in full under Simeone. And they've got 15 games to go. So that tells you exactly where the problem is. Now, is it specifically the defenders? My point has always been, and it hasn't changed, that the individuals are not particularly at the standard that they have been in the past. Savic and Jimenez are. When Felipe comes in, it lowers. I think when Hermoso comes in, the standard deteriorates. Having issues at right back, Marcos Llorente is going to be the right back, I think, now for a while. And that was evident on the goal. A new left back and Marcos Llorente playing right back. The first goal, Mayoral scores. Savic rushes out to confront, I think it was Yankto who's going to have the shot, who mishit the shot. And Felipe, to be fair to Felipe, he's left on his own. His centre-half's gone missing. He doesn't know if step up or drop off. He steps up, but he just stands still. And the full-backs are behind him, playing everyone on side. That's a sign of the lack of cohesion and unity in an Atletico Madrid back four. In the past, Savic wouldn't have gone out and closed that down. Correa was there. I mean, it's Correa's close enough to Jento to rush him into the shot, but Savage goes out. There's a big gaping hole. The two fullbacks are deeper. That wouldn't have happened in the past. And I'm not talking about Wanfren and Felipe 7 or 8 years ago. I'm talking about even last year. You know, the back four would have gone, at Trippier would have been out. He would have been level with Felipe. They would have caught players offside and it wouldn't have been a goal. So that's where we are with Atletico. And I'm not sure about... So when they asked me to anything I want to elaborate on, that was probably the one thing I could pick up on. I don't know what the midfield do anymore. I have to be honest. I don't know what Koke does anymore. Koke isn't a Casemiro or a Busquets, but he isn't an Aaron Bari in particular, as an example, in this game. So Koke's not getting up and down the pitch. He's not protecting the back four. So I do question. He's not mobile enough to go right, to go left, to cover all the gaps that might be left by, you know, fullbacks or wingback to push in on. Kondogbia, I think Rodrigo de Paul and Lamar are good, but Rodrigo de Paul was on the bench. Lamar, I think, could and should be more important to the team. I think he could be that player that's more dynamic in a central midfield role. Atletico, João Felix, it was interesting, wasn't it, what he said about, we all know what the problem is. And Simeone said, well, tell me. You know, if you think you should be coach, you tell me. Oh, and by the way, you're on the bench today. Yeah. And I think the problem is it's a complicated team selection, and not just in terms of rotating the starting 11, it's rotating the tactics. And I think the players are unsure exactly what they're trying to do, what their roles are in the team. That's why I'm saying about Koke, a player I really do respect. I have all the time in the world for, but I don't even think Koke knows his role in the team now, to the extent they're outplayed him in midfield by Hetafe. Hetafe were better than them in midfield. So there's a whole lot of issues. It's going to be intriguing to see when they play Man United. I mean, if either of the teams play well, they're going through. And I know people are still going to think that Atletico's got this rock-solid defence and Simeone's teams are boring. Even with these goals, these scorelines and the results they're having, you still will have to explain. No, actually, I mean, they're ranked 12th, weren't they, going into this game in the league table in defending. I haven't checked the stats this week to see if they've dropped a position or two. It is astonishing. I mean, this weekend was slightly different because two of the goals were accidental handballs. And we'll come on to the point you make. I have no idea anymore what's a handball and what's not. I really don't. And I think everybody is the same. You know, I think it was a goal scored yesterday. I haven't seen it in the Premier League by West Ham.
Oh, yeah, Dawson.
Where
yeah.
It hits an arm. I haven't seen it. But the same argument continues there that we don't seem to know what a genuine handball is anymore. You know, it's in one game you can see a shot deflect off a player's leg onto his arm. It's given, and another game it's not given, and it's a real issue that when a handball happens in the penalty box now, and they come to us, or we're all watching at home, we're all thinking the same. I don't know is the answer, unless it's a really arm out. We all assume that's going to be a penalty, but there's so many cases now where it is accidental handball. And unfortunate from point blank range and stuff like that. It's been given or it's not been given.
That's the one in Spain. It is different from the Premier League. I think in the Premier League they're not giving them if they've travelled a short distance or come off another bit of the body.
That's exactly.
Whereas in Spain, which one am I thinking? Am I thinking the Real Sociedad Granada one, where an opponent kicks it against his hand from all I don't know, a foot away.
There was a Valencia Alaves one. There was one, and the two Atletico Madrid ones, I don't think either of those are intentional handballs.
Yeah.
I mean, Lamar's.
I've got less sympathy for Lamar because his arm is waving a bit out there.
Yep.
Cunha's
as if his thigh and then his arm.
I don't think
his arm's not even out.
Yeah, I don't know how he could have not handballed it. Whereas Lamar, you could have not handballed it by not having your arm hanging out. That's would be my. If you could reasonably have avoided it. But I don't think Cunha could have reasonably avoided that handball. But there you go.
I agree. And then I think the referee, it was VAR to look at whether it was inside or outside.
Yeah.
And then you could see he was in the box. So that I think the Lamar one, I agree with you.
Yeah.
The Cunha one, when it happens, I'm looking at it and thinking, it hits his arm. But I don't know how they're going to interpret that, whether it's going to be a penalty or not. I wish I could be of more help, but I can't, which is daft because I knew the laws of football probably before I was 12, any of a young kid growing up. And then since then, it's been an ongoing battle that I'm losing.
Right, I think we'll leave it there. I think it's fascinating watching Atleti. No one's on about, you know, Simeone for the chopper or anything yet, aren't they? So we're giving him time because he obviously, it's just interesting to see how much chopping and changing he's going to do before he you know, calms down again or maybe get it right.
It's not easy for the players. I mean, the one thing I would say is in these circumstances with the everything's such a struggle and it's not going their way, the result did it the weekend. Great credit to their spirit to still win with 10 men. I'm also shocked, like, I don't know, a poll. Was the first touch, the first attempt, an attempt or a control to set himself up for the overhead kick? Straight away, I said, he missed the first attempt and scores the second. And when I see the replay, he does kick it down, but I'm not giving him too much credit by saying his first thought was, if I bang this down into the ground, I can then overhead, side volley, overhead, bicycle kick.
I'm voting for the middle one, which is he's basically stopping the ball, isn't he? I think is what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he hasn't thought, I'm going to, not the last one, I'm banging it down, then I'm overhead kicking it. I think he's thinking, I'm just going to stop this in the danger area.
Yep.
And then it bounced up nicely for him. And he
improvised really well, didn't he? And incredible, he's getting the two winning goals in the two spectacular matches that they've had in the home games. So to their credit, the players do still seem to appear to be with the manager because the way they fought back. The players that were substituted, Luis Suarez, looked like he was team were on the verge of winning the league when he was on the bench and they got the winning goal and then they were hanging on to hold on for all 3 points. So the group looks tight-knit. They just need to simplify it, I think, from Simeone. Go back to basics, simplify it, give everyone their jobs, and I'm sure we'll see an improvement. But it's hard to analyse them when they're changing systems every week and three or four times during the game.
Yeah.
So it's got, I think, just simplify it.
Right. And then Sunday night, Espanyol 2, Barcelona 2 was also terrific fun, wasn't it? Barcelona led through Pedri, and then they trailed Sergi Dada and then Raúl de Tomás. And then, as a wise man in the commentary position, Terry had said on a couple of occasions, surely, if you're going to keep crossing the ball, stick the big fella on. But no one had thought of that in football before.
That's the talking point in this game, isn't it? It was almost like an embarrassment from Xavi. I mean, it was the most obvious thing to do. I know people, Philip, in particular, who keeps in touch with, said throwing on more attacking players it doesn't, more often than not, it doesn't work. I kind of get that. I played in teams where suddenly you got three centre-forwards on and none of you know where to go and the team don't get the ball up the pitch because there's not enough other players to provide the service to those players that might create and to get the ball into the area where you might score. Sometimes it works because you end up with the other team backing off and sitting deep and they're not looking to come out. So extra bodies in there, hence we see time centre-halves going up. But with Adama Traore, he's been spectacular. I really do think he's been the quality. I've seen him at Wolves, of course, in English football, but not as much as I watch Spanish football, La Liga. So I don't see him week in, week out. I know the story. I know the narrative. Like so many other wingers that get an unfair, he gets down, he crosses it, but his final ball is terrible. Vinicius went through it at Real Madrid. I've got to be honest with what we've seen from Traore so far. It's a given. Every time he gets the ball, and if it's one against one, he gets by them and he gets a decent crossing. I don't know the stats. I haven't had time. It's been a whirlwind getting back home and stuff. I like to see exactly how many crosses Barcelona put in. I'd like to see how many crosses he put in. And it was almost like a form of embarrassment from Xavi. And I kind of get it. You've got Aubameyang on the bench. So he's going to be the first choice if you need a goals. But Aubameyang in the brief bits we've seen, tell his quality. I'm sure he's going to be have an impact at Barcelona because he just looks a really good footballer. But in the circumstances, Luke de Jong should have gone on first.
Yeah.
They were winning, they were getting so many crosses. Ferran Torres was getting on the end of the midfield players. were trying to get on the end of them, and Barcelona were getting sufficient players in the box, but Cabrera and Sergio Gomez were able to deal with that. And this is the center, Luke de Jong was only, 88th minute he came in as a sub. He scores his goal when, at that stage, Espanyol had three centre-halves on, all challenging him for the ball, and he still scored. Another one that went over the bar. The amount of crosses they got in here, another 5 minutes of Luke de Jong on, they probably would have scored the winner as well. It's gone ahead of so many players, isn't it?
Where do they go with this, though? It was an interesting signing, Adama Traore. I've always thought this. I've watched loads of his career. I've always thought he's too good for the teams he's played for. And then now he's at Barcelona. What do they do? Do they adjust? Do they start piling bodies into the box to get on the end of this supply of crosses that he can guarantee you, as you say? Or do you try and adjust him to play in a Barcelona kind of way? What's the future?
Yeah, I think that would be wrong. It's got to be a balance, because I think there are times in that game yesterday where they were too predictable. It's such an easy ball for everyone that plays for Barcelona now, because he hugs the touchline, so he stays out wide. The movement from the other players does create space for Traore, and it's an obvious pass for every player in Barcelona to look up now and ping it wide, because his control has been good. There's been some awkward deliveries out wide for him, and he's got it under control. And he Pedrosa yesterday, it was tough. He won't get much help from his teammates, and it was one against one. And it's almost a guarantee that even when there's no space, he has that little change of pace and gets a decent crossing. So, but it became too easy for Barcelona just to keep doing that. And therefore, cross after cross after cross was coming in the box. And you can't blame the Barcelona players. When they see a player that's skinning the fullback 2 weeks on the trot, you're going to keep giving him the ball. So I think it's a balance. I think Serginho Dest did okay as well. He played that role like Dani Alves, where he did go and play the more central midfield role. His natural instinct, he kept seeing him so many times. He went to go wide and he changed his, realised quickly and changed. That was a feature throughout the game. But by and large, he left that space for Traore, and that's what Barcelona should do. But they also have to use the other options in the team as well by going through the centre of the pitch, going down the left with Jordi Alba. So it becomes too obvious and too easy. You can't defend Traore. 18 in this game, Espanyol were able to defend the cross.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first goal in the opening minute of the game is from deeper. It's from Alba. That was poorly defended by Espanyol. But the rest of the game, they kind of kept heading it away. Ferran Torres went close for a couple of headers. But that was about it until De Jong comes on. And, I mean, De Jong must have gone ahead of so many of the players. I personally wouldn't put him ahead of Aubameyang as the centre-forward for Barcelona. And I think Aubameyang, probably the next game, should play start the game. But in terms of an option from the bench, I said in commentary, it beats Pique, it beats putting Araujo up front. He is a really respectable, great interview after the game where he knows his position in the squad. Basically, he is your plan, I wouldn't say B, C or D. And he knows what he's doing when he goes up there. Technically, it was a fantastic header. I mean, a little bit of movement, and he gets up, and he guides it down, he gets it on target, he gets it in the corner. I mean, it's going to be an option, and he's probably gone past Memphis. He's probably gone past Brathwaite in terms of who do Barcelona keep for next season. So, I assume he's happy with that role. At the age he is now, he's now 31. If he's the plan C or D from Barcelona on the bench, I'm assuming he'd take that.
There's so many unknowns, isn't there, about Barcelona's future? Yeah. We don't know that they've got Traore for next season.
Dembele?
And
he's another one. Had Traore and Dembele wide. How many crosses are you going to get in?
Yeah.
And the width for the attack, and we haven't included Ferran Torres, who they've bought, and we know he's going to be there next season. So it's the one thing I would say about, I was disappointed with the performance of a player I know people know I like, Frankie de Jong. I think he made noises this week that he wants to stay at Barcelona despite other big clubs being interested. I didn't think he was anywhere near the level in this game. I thought he gave the ball away too much. His aggression wasn't enough, particularly because it was a derby, Catalan derby. And I envisaged him being brought off in order to get Gavi back in midfield and then another strike, another attacking player on. So moving Gavi, you know, back into a midfield role. So he's going to have to be careful because Gavi gives you more than Frankie de Jong at the moment. Pedri clearly gives you more than Frankie de Jong. And is de Jong going to replace Busquets? Probably not at the moment. So I think it's by shopping Gavi around and getting him into the front three, that's going to stop now because the other players are all available and getting fitter. So it's going to be interesting. Frankie de Jong has to up his game, I think.
The ridiculous spat towards the end that saw Gerard Piqué sent off means that I think they've only got one centre back next week for the Valencia game, and unfortunately, Terry, that was Eric Garcia, who came in for quite a lot of stick.
And Napoli as well.
Yeah,
Napoli on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Europa League.
Well, he can play in that though, can't he? He's only suspended, isn't he, for La Liga, Piqué.
Oh, but, yes.
But it does mean, yeah. But Eric Garcia, and then lots and lots of people saying, what is he doing playing for Barcelona? And it's a difficult one to explain, isn't it?
It is. And my only defence at the moment is he's 21.
Yeah.
And I was guilty at the beginning of the season as treating him as if he was an older player. If he was a 21-year-old that come through, like Mingueza is older, but Mingueza is 22. We still talk of Mingueza as a younger player at Barcelona. Garcia is younger. So, but he it's almost like he's been promoted above his pay grade when he was at City, Spain, playing in the national team, and now Barcelona. I have no idea. It was a fantastic pass from Sergi Dada to Raúl de Tomás. Great touch, gets out of his feet, second touch is a goal. But it looked like he was surprised that, oh, Raúl de Tomás is there. Of course he's going to be there. Yeah. Raúl de Tomás does. It's what Espanyol do. They try to find Raúl de Tomás. He's the main goal scorer. Why do you look, oh, that's a real, you know, it was
awful defending, wasn't it?
His performance was poor in every sense.
You either head the ball away or you... Yeah, well, he didn't. What did he? Oh, he dropped quicker. In. He dropped in, played
it's
him on side.
Dead,
yeah, he played him on side, and then he stepped out and didn't head the ball. So he basically let him go in, and then he didn't clear the ball. You think, well, do something. Either play him offside or jump up and head it or go with him. But don't just play him on side and then let the ball go over your head. That's just awful, isn't it?
No, it was. I'd like to defend him. I can't on that goal. And there's some other mistakes he made as well. As I said, I just think at 21, he's got a lot to learn. But we've all assumed he was going to be better because he came from City and then Barcelona and plays for Spain. But I'm afraid there's a long way to go yet for him to convince Xavi and maybe the Barcelona supporters that he could. He's 21 years of age, he's got time, but it's not going to be. He shouldn't be allowed to develop whilst being an important player in the first team at Barcelona. I would say Oscar Mingueza is probably a better option than him at the moment if they are struggling for cover with Longley and Titi out. Araujo, I think, was just a knock. We'll wait and see. But no, and the spat between Melamed and Piqué. I thought the referee could have allowed a moment in the game.
Sorry, say it again. Say it again, Terry. We lost you.
Sorry, I think that the spat between Piqué and Melamed could have just took a moment and just pulled them apart because it was near the end of the game, very near the end of the game. They went head to head, but there was no head, but he could have pulled them apart, told them to get on with it. Melamed, I think, deserved the yellow card for his part in it. I think Piqué kind of clipped him, didn't he? Because there was an act of initial aggression from Melamed, and then Melamed went back at Piqué and it continued and continued from there. I thought the referee could have just pulled them apart, left it as it was, with Melamed picking up the yellow, and they would have split up and gone, you know, wherever the next phase of play was. So I think he was quick to show the second yellow to both players, the red card to both players in the end. But it was, Espanyol were really good, suffering at the moment, been having a struggle in La Liga. They've raised their game for the derby, of course, and with Raúl de Tomás, they've got a player that can find the back of the net. Sergi Dada in particular had a really good game, good player on his day. And he's generally a reliable player. But in this game, he was spectacular, scored a good goal and lovely pass for Raúl de Tomás. And Espanyol probably thought they were so close to getting all 3 points. And that will feel like a defeat, that they conceded the goal in the 96th minute from Luke de Jong.
In the interest of balance, I agree with the ref. I would have sent them off. I thought it was, and I thought he did it quickly. I didn't think it was a bang bang, off you go. I think they were both stupid. I thought PK, is going to be the president of Barcelona soon. He can't go around. Yeah. You know, he's going to be slightly more mature than that. Anyway,
yeah, I'm disappointed with still no fans in the derbies.
Yeah, yeah. 25,000.
No away fans.
Yeah, yeah.
No away fans. There's a ban on away fans, and it has been for years now.
Yeah.
So I would still like to see an open game where the away supporters, whether it's at the Camp Nou or Barcelona, Espanyola, I still think that it's better with some away fans in the stadium. And that's an easy option, isn't it? From something that the firework incident that happened a long, long time ago. And I keep forgetting there's no away fans at the Catalan derbies. Control it, you know. Yeah. Put some effort into making sure that it can't happen again. Don't put the away supporters underneath the home supporters. That's what happened before, wasn't it? And fireworks were being thrown down towards the away supporters because it was easy. You know, work harder to segregate the supporters, work harder to work on a relationship between the fans of Espanyol and Barcelona rather than just go, can't be bothered, ban away fans at the two fixtures.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, the obvious change to Spanish football is treat the fans better. And if it means, like you say, just getting it right, just the detail of, you know, the CCTV if you need to, CCTV, the surveillance if you need to, searching if you need to, but basically better, just trust, you know, if you can possibly trust the fans to watch the game, then you get a much better atmosphere. Anyway, let's crack on, shall we, to Villarreal versus Real Madrid. We gave it the big build-up on Friday. And it wasn't a bad game. It wasn't a stalemate, 0-0. But the same problems with Real Madrid. I think it's one goal in three games, isn't it, without Benzema. He doesn't like any other attacker, so he likes Vinny, obviously.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale got a go, and he hasn't kicked the ball since August for Real Madrid. But whenever I see him play, I think I'm almost more annoyed. I think what a waste of the last couple of years of your career, just sitting. I know he went to Spurs, but you know he had a season at Real Madrid of virtually not playing, didn't he? And this season of virtually not playing. What a waste of a talent.
He's still only 32 as well. Hmm. So no one knows what's in the mind of Gareth Bale. I think that's the issue, isn't it? He's kept his thoughts pretty private. He's not said too much about what he wants to do next. He said nothing about what he wants to do next. And when you do see him play, you can see why Ancelotti trusts him. I mean, to the extent, I mean, I thought he was good. Didn't think he was brilliant. I thought he was good. Surprisingly good, considering the circumstances. As you said, the lack of playing time. He can play in that centre attacking role. He will be better than Isco if he wants to play anybody but Luka Jovic. Gareth Bale can do that role. And to the extent, he must have played well because the Spanish press actually said, you know what, he did okay. And he might just be the player to play against PSG if Benzema doesn't make it. So that tells you that Gareth Bale must have done well, because if he hadn't, they would have come down on him like a ton of bricks. He's the most unpopular Real Madrid player, probably at the club in terms of the Spanish media. But they begrudgingly said, no, you know what? We can tell that he is a player. He has been a player. Ignore all the other stuff. He's there till the end of the season. He can still do a job and a very good job. So he was unlucky not to score. He was denied, I think, three occasions by the goalkeeper, Geronimo Rulli. Interesting game, first half, Villarreal, a little bit like Barcelona, loads of crosses. Chukwueze absolutely tormented Marcelo. And that's a problem, I think, if Mondi's not fit, Marcelo doesn't appear to be. I'm sure teams going to look at that and think, if Marcelo's playing, we've got to get at him. And it was interesting, funny actually, listening to Casemiro after the game saying, what was the difference? Because in the second half, Real Madrid were much better. You could argue Villarreal could have won it on their first half performance. Real Madrid on their second half performance. Courtois and Rudy both played well. That's one of the main reason the game was scoreless. And Casemiro said at halftime, Ancelotti suggested that we play differently. And I think, I wonder what I can. Can I just suggest, lad? Can I make a suggestion? Can we? And actually, Ancelotti came out after the game and said, we played like a team in the first half that didn't want to win the game or didn't want to win the league. So clearly, in the first half, it looked like a Real Madrid team who were playing PSG on Tuesday and had that on their mind. The second half, it looked like a Real Madrid team that wanted to make sure they stayed top of La Liga, to win La Liga, and they were much better. And it basically boiled down to working harder, working faster, and pulling their finger out. And that's probably the narrative of Ancelotti's halftime team talk, which Casemiro said, he suggested that we play differently. So I wonder, I'm not sure too many managers go, is it? Thought, lads, maybe a suggestion. but Ancelotti, I think, is, you know, right to raise his concerns, and it had an impact, and Real Madrid could have won it in the second half.
They've got a huge game against PSG coming up on Tuesday night, haven't they? and it's such a hard one to call, isn't it? Obviously, Real Madrid fans are keeping a very close eye on Mbappe, who is playing well. He scored the winner at the weekend against Rennes. Messi looks fitter than he was at the start of the season. They used to have a fella called Neymar play for them, but I don't know what's happened to him.
Ramos. Play for them, hasn't played for them much.
One red card, one goal, Sergio Ramos, in about four games of football that he's played. So Real Madrid did great business not signing him on. We never mention it, really, do we? We mention when players leave all the time, but having let him go, wow, what a good decision, because he's just not been fit, has he, for a year and a half?
No, exactly.
Give us any idea what's going to happen on Tuesday?
Excuse me. No, I don't, actually. I must admit, we have this thing with PSG every year. I mean, some seasons they've done well in the Champions League. Other seasons, they disappoint, whether it's the current group of players or the previous groups of players they've had over the years. It's always been a collection of superstars, yet they haven't been able to win it. I don't know, I have to be honest. I don't know, because I don't know how good PSG are going to be against Real Madrid. I don't know how good Real Madrid are against the other best teams in Europe yet. So I think it will be interesting to... Yeah, I can't wait for the two games. That's the only thing I would say.
You will have to wait for the second one. That's
exactly. In April.
But yes, anyway, that's going to be
interesting. Benzema's key, isn't he? He is key.
Yeah.
But the freshness of Modric is key. A left back, Mondi, if he's back, is key. Do you go, if he's not, do you go with Nacho at left back? Do you go with Nacho at centre back and put Alaba at left back? I think it's that extreme now that they can't play Marcelo against a quality team like PSG. So one or two issues for Modric was rested, so that helps. I can't wait. I think Real Madrid are really good. But I want confirmation of how good. And I think we're going to get it in these two ties against Pochettino and his crew.
Right. So we'll talk about that with the Patreons. If you want to become a patron, it's patreon.com/LTEL. You can do it from a few euros, a few quid, whatever currency you want to use, I think. Well, no.
Just in case anyone's confused, it's not me, you, and Slash from Guns N' Roses. I've had one or two people say Slash, that'd be worth a listen to, his thoughts on Spanish football.
Yeah, we're still waiting for him to turn up. It's like Gary Lineker on La Liga TV, Terry. We're still waiting for Slash's appearance. Pretty controversial. Terry had no part in that remark. Worth every penny, like Neymar and Sergio Ramos. Let's go also to the top of the league. So Sevilla 2, Elche 0. I saw, I can't remember who it was, someone made a good comment about Elche didn't actually want to play a football match, seemed to just want to spoil the game. But Sevilla, in the end, came out with a 2-0 win. Papu Gomez and then Rafa Mir with his 10th goal of the season.
Yeah, and a player that gets criticised, even got criticised after this game and this goal. Come off the bench and scores a really good header. The type of header you're going to get Martial put crosses into the box. Textbook centre-forward header, wasn't it? Pulls away from the defence. Poor defensive play, but he sets himself up well with the movement and then smashes it back across goal with a really firm header. Papu Gomez was what we've grown accustomed to seeing now, that classic cut inside, weaving dribble, slight deflection on the finish that deceives the goalkeeper. But no, Sevilla deserved that. And that maybe, I wouldn't call it a slump, that they've had a difficult period in terms of players missing the African Nations Cup and injuries. One or two coming back now, and Nesri's, you know, back in the fold, one or two others. And this was the rut. This was the type of result against the Elche team who were good. Lucas Boye was missing, so that didn't help their cause. But it was it's a solid result for Sevilla because Elche are in good form, which then meant the pressure was not pressure was on Real Madrid, but it put the onus on Real Madrid to win to keep the 6-point gap. They didn't, so now Sevilla, with the 4-point deficit, must surely believe, everyone must surely believe they're still in the title race. I mean, Xavi was talking Barcelona up before the game against Espanyol, saying, never say never, we're blah, blah, blah. If they got the win, then the Real Madrid joined, the gap would have closed. It's not going to happen. But I think Sevilla genuinely are now the only challengers, despite, we're going to be talking about Real Betis again in a minute. But I think Sevilla, with that 4-point deficit, surely have to believe that, if they've turned the corner, Real Madrid have had some difficult results. Real Madrid will have more difficult results. Sevilla, maybe they've just come out of their difficult period with the players that have been missing. So, and they've got to play Real Madrid at the Sanchez Pizjuan. So it's Real Madrid are in the best position, clearly, but Sevilla are putting up a fight.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Espanyol. No, I haven't done Espanyol. You mentioned Levante versus Betis. So another 4 goals for Betis. Another defeat for Levante. So that much, I suppose, was predictable. But Levante, they gave it a go. They got back into the game, didn't they? But in the end, Betis had too much quality for them.
It looked like a sparring match or a training game. It really did. I mean, Levante have given up. I mean, Dani Gomez gets a couple of goals. 3 goals came in really quick succession, didn't they? Either side of half-time for both teams. He was able to get a couple for Levante, but it just looked like Betis suddenly thought, oh, we better get another one, and went and scored again and wrapped the game up. Betis are really good at the moment. Levante are really poor. I of course, favoured Betis going into the game. I was surprised how easy it was. And Fekir is on fire at the moment. I mean, no Canales, so the onus is more on him. He's not got his playing partner alongside him. He's, great news for Betis that he's signed a new deal. Great news for La Liga as well. We talked in the past about it was a bit of a coup when they got him and Carvalho. And it's been a slow burner for both of those. But at the moment, they're currently both in fantastic form and showing you why bigger clubs than Betis, I mean, traditional top clubs around Europe in Champions League play regular basis, were always interested in those two players. But Betis were the ones that took the step to bring them in. And, along with the rest of the players at Betis now, they're just a joy to watch. I mean, them and Atletico, the teams that are watching La Liga. Betis, it was, as I say, looked like a training game for me. When, Betis raced into a lead, then Levante get back into it a little bit and Betis score again. It was so easy for Real Betis in this match. So disappointing for Levante. If they ever wanted a plan to get relegated, this is it. 2 novice managers after sacking Paco Lopez, 1 signing in the January transfer window. They're not much in terms of opposition to anybody at the moment.
Real Sociedad beat Granada by 2-0. They've only scored 9 goals at home. And they've got 10 points, which is going somewhere. No, they've got 6 wins. No, they've got far more than that. What do I mean? But they've got 6 wins and 4 draws, haven't they? So they've got
lots of points.
22 points. Low goals. Yeah, 9 goals to get them 22 points in home games, which is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. I mean, Rafinha scores again in this game. He's actually scored. I thought he played well. Oyarzabal gets a penalty and scores and makes the goal. They dominated this game and still only won 2-0. And one of those goals was a penalty. And Rafinha's, the second goal comes in the 73rd minute. The efficiency in front of goals, they're lacking confidence, aren't they, at the moment? Because there's no logic to why they don't score, particularly at home. You look at the team, I think maybe the one criticism I would have, and it's not much of a criticism, maybe the fullbacks could be more adventurous. I don't see, at the weekend, it's Gorosabo and Ayhan Munoz. They're not flying up and down the wing, and joining the mid-attacking play. And then you've got a back four that pretty much stays at home. You had Zubimendi, I think, is an excellent player in midfield. Then the rest of the team are attackers. Mikel Merino, Yann Azai, David Silva, Oyarzabal, and Isak. So you can't look at it and think they're lacking, you know, attacking creative players. They're lacking strikers. They haven't. They've got Solov to come off the bench as well. They've got Pultu to come off the bench as well. Loads of attacking players. So I'm trying to think, why are they? I think one other thing is this season, they've not been efficient in front of goal. Even in this game, could have been four or five. Even in this game, they've not tucked away their chances. So Isak on four goals is a bit of an issue. His all-round play is good, but he needs to be, you know, he needs to be banging in. For him to be talked about going to a next level club, he needs to be in 15 to 20,
yeah.
doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's on four.
Yeah.
And you look at his play and you go, he's really good. Oh.
I saw someone linking him with replacing Aubameyang at Arsenal. And I'm thinking, why would you pay a lot of money for a guy who scored four goals in the season?
Yes. Yeah. Anyway. I mean, it is important. You're looking at signing a striker for a lot of money. You have to look at that column that says, oh, score goals. So that's a big turning point in his career now. Because there's no doubt he's got the talent. And he plays well for Sweden, scores goals for Sweden. He's got the potential, but he does the most important thing for a centre forward is the goals column next to it. To give you any chance of improving your team to the next level or you moving on to a Champions League, regular Champions League team around Europe for 50 million or so. So the four goals isn't sufficient enough for a club to well, I say that, it probably is for some clubs would still pay it if they got the opportunity, despite him only scoring four. So I think that's the problem for Elsos. They're not efficient enough in front of goal.
One of the best results of the weekend was Alaves, of course, who needed a result, and they got one against Valencia, beaten by 2-1, and it squeezes it all up at the bottom. Another couple of penalties in this one, and Mamadou Loom. So important win, this one for Alaves, Terry.
Massive win. I didn't realise they'd gone 11 without a win. I knew that Mendilibar hadn't won. We kind of broke up that sequence of results in two different parts. So for a team that were really low on confidence, this was a game where Valencia playing in the Copa del Rey semi-final midweek. Kind of an ideal time. Bordalás rotated the team a touch. Bordalás complained about the tactics and then realised what he was saying out loud of Alaves. That, oh, they were direct and they were aggressive. And then he suddenly thought, I can't say that. I'm not complaining because my team can do that sometimes. I like the way they play. But he was on the verge of complaining about direct tactics, which you're going to get against a Mendilibar team and against a team that haven't won in 11. A team that are not blessed with loads of creative attacking players. They've tried to improve it in the transfer window. But it was a crucial, disappointing performance from Valencia and lots of rotations. A very young Valencia team as well, particularly in midfield. Elex Moriba, Soler was the more experienced at 25. And Yunus Musa, who's 19, so two 19-year-olds and a 25-year-old. In general, the team was young, and they came and stuck against an Alaves team and given themselves a better chance of staying up now.
Yes.
They deserved the win, actually, Alaves.
Yes, as did Osasuna. So Rayo Vallecano, they're invincible. Days are long behind them, aren't they? 3-0 home defeat by Osasuna, which is a really solid result for Osasuna.
It just goes to show, doesn't it, Rayo? Similar to Cadiz last year, and Cadiz were safe last year. I mean, they're that blistering start, newly promoted team. There's always going to be a slight deterioration in results. It does take its toll, and it's not unexpected. They are on 31 points, which they would have gladly have taken at this stage of the season if you'd offered them that at the start of the season. I mean, they're probably 5-6 points away from safety. I know they're sliding down the table. Iroh has mentioned it all season that that's their priority is staying up. People have gone, no, European football. No, this was always going to happen, particularly when they're in a cup run as well. For Rayo to be in the semi-final is a big deal. So that you can understand why they've taken their eye off the ball. So that's at Rayo. Osasuna, really fun to watch it. I love what Arrasate's done. They went 10 games without a win or one win in 10, something like that. And instead of like most managers, 99% of managers, they would think, right, how can we make sure we don't get beat and make sure we don't concede a goal? Let's make sure we can see if we can grind out a win. Against Granada a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago, they went, surprised Granada, with so much attacking play. Their away record is excellent, and they did it in this game. I mean, Moncayola's first goal, there's about four players in the penalty box, and he's one of them, and he's a central midfield player. I mean, it goes from one side of the pitch to the other, Brasenac, Chimi Avila knocks it back, Moncayola is running into the box with red shirts all over the place. And that was the theme of their game, the amount of times they get it wide, they get it in the box. And midfield players, Brasenac and Moncayola, covering so much ground, proving that you can be a midfield player that does both ends of the pitch. You don't have to just sit in one area, either defensively or offensively. And they're doing it with real enthusiasm. And Ruben Garcia said after the game, and it confirmed exactly what you can see, he said, we had a discussion and we said we needed to be more ambitious in our approach, which comes from the manager. And they embraced it. And the manager can say to the players, do you fancy this? What about if we don't go into a game thinking, how can we be hard to beat? Can we grind out a point, maybe nick a win? Or do we, they've got the points, 32 points now. And they had the points, but I didn't think they were ever going to get dragged into relegation battle. So go out and be ambitious and expressive. Get players in the box. Take teams by surprise. Osasuna are another team that I didn't think would get relegated. They won't get relegated, but I didn't think they would. And probably have that freedom of being a mid-table team of, let's have a go, instead of just being hard to beat. So I find watching Osasuna at the moment really enjoyable. And they've got really good players. They always do. They have a certain type of player. And I think they're a really good team at the moment, Osasuna.
And what about Cadiz and Celta Vigo? As I confess, Terry, I didn't watch this.
Santimina missed a late penalty. That was about it. And it's Cadiz are having more possession than Sergio. They've signed some players. They're having a go. Celta are decent on the road as well. So it wasn't a great game. It wasn't a terrible 0-0, but it wasn't a great game. Aspas was replaced. So hence, Santimina takes the late penalty and a decent save from Ledesma. Wasn't a great game. Was worried at the start on Saturday when we were sitting there waiting for four games on Saturday, four games on Sunday, and the first two were 0-0, and then we were faced with Rayo against Osasuna. Luckily, goals in that one, and little did we know we were going to get seven in the Atletico Getafe game. So I had a hint. If you look at it in general, Atletico Getafe, we've had 2 0-0s. We've got Rayo Osasuna. We could be doing an hour-long programme at the end of tonight with the potential of no goals scored. So thankfully, there was goals. So it was a more than decent weekend of La Liga action. Proves to show that we don't know anything we're talking about, because the results and the performances change from week to week from so many teams. But I was glad we got some goals.
No, we get it right. They get it wrong, Terry. That's the way around it, isn't it? And obviously, we never talk about Athletic because we record on a Monday. So they don't play weekends. Every weekend off if you sign for Athletic Club. So that's tonight, Mallorca versus Athletic. So enjoy that, everybody. And the European football is back. And so it's Real Madrid against Paris Saint-Germain on Tuesday night. And then Spanish Thursdays from now on, isn't it?
Yes.
The Europa League. There's lots of Spanish teams in the Europa League. For now, we'll see how they fare. It wasn't a brilliant first half of the season for the Spanish clubs in Europe. We'll see how they go in the second half. So if you want to join us, the Patreons, we'll see you all Friday. And we'll join us, me, Terry and Slash on patreon.com. And we'll see everyone for a regular podcast again next week. See ya.